lot to talk about.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. President Obama is getting together with his economic team today at the White House to talk about the fallout and what still needs to be done to reverse it. Let's bring in Marketplace's Steve Henn to talk about this meeting today. Steve, good morning. What's on the agenda?
Well, most of the president's big economic advisors are going to be there. Larry Summers, the Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, the Fed Chairman, Ben Bernanke, as well as the nation's top bank regulators, Sheila Bair, and the Comptroller of the Currency, John Dugan. So what they're going to be talking about, really, it sounds like it will run the gamut of all of the administration's reform initiatives thus far. They're going to review their efforts to stabilize the housing market. They're going to talk about efforts to clean up bank balance sheets and provide banks with enough capital to weather this financial storm. And of course, one of the big pending pieces of business out there that the markets are really waiting for is any word on how the nation's biggest banks are faring with these so-called stress tests that are going on right now.
So let's talk a little bit about those tests then. What's the end game there?
Well, you know, when these tests were initially designed, they were set up in many ways as a test that banks really couldn't fail. So what regulators are trying to get a sense of is how well-positioned the country's major financial institutions are to withstand a big economic storm. So they're looking at how their assets would fare if unemployment rose above 10% or if housing values fell another 25%. And the idea is that if banks show signs of real distress in that environment, that regulators are going to ask them to go to the private markets and raise more money, probably through issuing new stock. And if they can't do that, then the government has said that taxpayers will come back and invest in these institutions again. You know, it's a delicate issue. They don't want to sort of tar any bank with a black brush and say this bank is doomed. But they want to make sure that if the economy continues to sour, that all these big banks have the resources they need to get through the storm.
All right. Marketplace's Steve Henn joining us from Washington. Steve, thank you.
Sure thing.
All right. Stocks have stayed in positive territory. In Asia, the Hang Seng closed up 3%. Japan's Nikkei added about 0.5%. Yesterday, the Dow added 246 points to close at 8083. NASDAQ and S&P shares gained 3.75%. Also yesterday, European shares were higher, but markets there and here in the States are closed today for Good Friday. And on this Christian holy day, this weekend marks the end of Lent. It's a time when many stay away from meat, sweets, or alcohol. But some people have gone on a 40-day eco-fast. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Jennifer Collins.
For Lent this year, Mary Hetherington went on a carbon fast. She bought organic produce, she paid for a high-level cleaning of her furnace, and she learned a lesson.
It's a little bit more expensive sometimes to be more conscious of what you're buying.
Hetherington also helped lead a class of more than 20 people at her parish in Fresno, California. Instead of just cutting out meat on Fridays, they tried to trim their carbon emissions every day. She's one of many Christians around the globe going eco-friendly for Lent this year. Businesses are starting to notice. Marketing consultant David Almy says Christians are talking much more about sustainable consumption.
Anytime you hear about any group getting ready to go green, it's exciting.
So does that mean priests will start hearing, "Bless me, Father, for my carbon footprint is too large"?
I don't know that I would actually count that as one of the things that I would go into confession on at this point.
But Hetherington says she plans to make the carbon fast a permanent part of her life. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice, over 10,000 independent insurance agencies across America committed to treating customers as people, not policies. Online at trustedchoice.com.
Baseball season has begun in earnest this week, but if the off-season and spring training numbers are any indication, owners and teams aren't expecting much. And Business of Sports commentator Diana Nyad joins us now to talk about it. Diana, what are we hearing from teams going in?
Well, let's take a quote from the White Sox chief marketing officer. He says, "We are going to have to fight and kick and scratch and claw to even break even this year."
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
You know, ball clubs, of course, used to make some good money from sponsors, right? I mean, those logos that you see on the ballpark or on the programs, the so-called official sponsor of
the
team.
Sure, sure.
Are sponsors as eager to get in on the action?
Well, you know, I mentioned the White Sox. I mean, you know, there's a devastating situation. Their three biggies were Motorola in terrible trouble in Chicago anyway. So for this year, you know, that's a wipeout. Buick was one of their big sponsors,
GM.
They lost them as well. And, of course, there's Bank of America, which is the overall sponsor of Major League Baseball, and they still have a presence. But as far as the White Sox go, in Chicago, they really had LaSalle Bank, which is now bought and acquired by B of A, and LaSalle has gone under. So they've lost their three major sponsors, and they're just scrounging around to get the smaller guys to fill in and just try to get through this year, as a lot of people are.
So smaller guys, it's going to take a lot of smaller guys to fill these big shoes.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And the Red Sox are a great example of that. They lost, as the White Sox did, their biggies too. PC Connection, Nikon were their biggies. But now even the Cambridge Eye Center, I mean, you know, just the local guy down the street, almost like the Cheers bar, you know, they're not in the Red Sox business this year either.
What does this mean, Diana, then, in the scheme of selling baseball as an entertainment value?
You know what I think? The analogy is a little bit like all of us. If you look at your stock portfolio and you say, oh, my God, am I going to jump off a cliff or am I going to stay tight and hope that, you know, even over the next couple of years, I could break even. I'm not making money anymore. Maybe I will again in 5 years. I think that's what Major League Baseball is realistically saying. Payroll is down, and that's unheard of. 14 of the 30 teams this year have a smaller payroll than they did last year. And who knows? You know what? That could bode well for the future. We've all been saying, why should these people? We love them. They entertain us. But why should they make that kind of money? Well, this year, they had to accept scaling back. So it may scale back for the future, which I think is good, you know, for the big future of baseball.
Sounds like a correcting market.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
All right. Business of Sports commentator Diana Nyad, thanks.
Thank you so much.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.